We're back to the Neil Haley Show on the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment. And I'm excited to welcome to the program my co-host, Caregiver Dave. I'm interviewing him twice. He's become my our Friday guest in a way. And now we have an amazing guest to talk to. And I love the talk about life after football. And Dave, you're getting dinged every second. You're becoming this celebrity yourself. You just finished up your TEDx talk. And now you're going to talk to a very interesting NFL athlete. And the funny thing was, you were in Delaware. Mike played for the Philadelphia Eagles, so go ahead and introduce our guest.
I wanted to do three things when I flew into Philadelphia. As you know, Delaware doesn't have an airport, and you know what those three things are, Mike? Can you guess? Because apparently it's pretty common.
Well, hopefully it wasn't going to the Eagles game this weekend.
Well, okay, we'll make it four. I wanted a cheesesteak sandwich, right? A Philly cheesesteak. Genuine. I go to Venice Beach in California, and there's a sign at the Great Western Steak and Hoagie Company, 3,000 miles to Philadelphia, eat here. And then I wanted to run up the stairs that Rocky ran up and pose in front of the Rocky statue. And I did all three of them. Well, I almost did all three of them. I was too tired to run up those steps. But Mike, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Hey, that's the same thing. I was with the LA Rams and then came to Philadelphia. First thing I did, got a picture, got a cheesesteak, got a picture with the Rocky statue, and ran the stairs. Yeah,
wow.
Same thing.
That is so unbelievable. I mean, Rocky isn't even real, and they build him a statue.
Well, see, they had to have Rocky for all that time as your hero because we hadn't won a Super Bowl. But now that actually the heat's pressure's off, they won the Super Bowl, we're good.
And what's even more incredible, I had to wait 20 minutes in that stupid line to take a picture with Rocky.
He's a famous guy here. Philadelphia.
Mike can't talk bad about Philly.
With your questions. Yeah. What made you go into football?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. I always thought I loved the Army. I thought I was always going to join the Army. I was Army cadet, Army Reserve. I was going to join the regular force. When I was leaving college, and then all of a sudden, I loved playing football, though, too. I mean, football was sort of regimented along the same lines. And in high school, I was already getting, you know, when I was in the 11th grade, already getting looked at colleges. I ended up going to a Canadian school, and, you know, things took off there. First 2 years, I played tackle. I destroyed my knee. First 2 years, I played middle linebacker and rush end, and then I hurt my knee. And then they put me in offensive tackle because the tendency was put a lot of Canadians in the Canadian Football League at tackle, playing offensive line. And things sort of took off there. And actually, before my senior year even started, I had Atlanta, Green Bay, and Denver come and work me out. And they were saying, well, you know, that's against NCAA violations. I go, yeah, it is, but this is Canada. It doesn't matter. So I was running 40, so they knew who I was. And then I got invited to the combine, and, you know, I got invited to the East-West Shrine game. I had 2.5 tackles on the kickoff, and then ran well and performed well at the combine, and I got drafted in the first round, the first Canadian draft in the first round in the NFL.
So, Mike,
how long was your career?
Oh, God, sorry.
I played 3 years with the Rams, 5 years with the Eagles, a year in Cleveland, a couple more years in the Canadian Football League, and then once I got out of that, I came back to the Philly area. I went to Temple. I coached there, the offensive line. And I got my master's degree in business when I was coaching there. So along that line, I was there 5 years. And you know what? I was turning 40, met my future ex-wife. And, you know, at that time I was looking forward to, you know, the house and the white picket fence. And I got being on the road recruiting and traveling. And you know what? I took a banking job with a phone and a computer, 2-3 screens, and that's what it looks like now.
See, Mike, you went and you got all the questions. Say, so Dave, already Mike must have already got the questions. He's that kind of organized person. He must have mental telepathy because that's exactly what I wanted to tell in the story. But so that means now, Dave, guess what? Throw all the questions out. Have fun with Mike. Let's go specifically enough Canada. Are you from Canada, Mike? So you grew you're Canadian citizen then?
I'm a Canadian citizen. Originally a Canadian citizen, I became a U.S. citizen in 2001.
Wow. And so
I'm a landed immigrant.
And I'm going to hit the second question. There's not many NFL players, I mean, that were from Canada that went on to the NFL. It's always the other way around. And you talk about playing, I thought, you know, college football stories, but your stories are going to be quite different in Canada. So did you want, if you were that good, why didn't you play in the U.S.?
You know, that it was 1986. Not a lot of films. Some guys were going down. I know a guy that works for TSN up in Canada, and he's real in the Canadian Football League. His name is Schultz. And Chris Schultz, he got in a bus, and he traveled to all these schools. He ended up going to the University of Arizona on a full ride, played at Dallas for a few years, and came back to Canadian Football League. But, you know, at the time, I was, he had 8mm film. He didn't really have, it's not like today. It wasn't, it's 1986. I didn't really have a hook. I mean, I was a good athlete, but I don't know if I was that good. And, you know, the school we played in would be, you know, single or double A. So, and the college I went to was more like a Harvard or Princeton kind of thing. You know, it was the, you know, number one, number two in the country every year. It was an academic school. And, hell, I had to get a job. I never had a scholarship. I was in the Army Reserve. I saved money up. And, you know, it was, I still had a student loan when I graduated.
Interesting. Oh, wow.
It's a different world.
It seems like a different world. Go ahead, Dave. What question you have for Mike, kind of going back in thought process and thinking about his career and everything like that?
Yeah. So tell us, what was your favorite moment playing college football?
Favorite moment of college football? You know what?
Got to think about that one, huh?
It was intermixed. You know, one of the favorite moments, we actually went to the national championship, and in the third quarter of the game before, I destroyed my knee. I was playing middle linebacker, and I missed the national championship. You know, it's a funny thing. When you talk about favorite moments, there's a lot of favorite moments that are intermixed. But, you know, after what, since 1986 to today, 30-plus years, you remember the moments that were the most traumatic, you know, losing important games, getting injured, those kind of things. And you know what? I think that was the thing I remember the most. And then, you know, the crazy thing is I actually, you know, totally destroyed my knee and came back in 8 months and I went to left tackle and I didn't miss a snap or a practice the whole game, season. So I was sort of, that was a good moment. But I think at my highlight of my senior year was getting drafted in the National Football League.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah. So again, I definitely would be in certain ways. And how many players now, your university that you attended, how well known are you on that campus because of getting to play in the NFL? Especially when I don't know how many guys that play in at that university get to go on to the next level.
Well, none of them were gone. There's maybe one guy in the school's history. Played in the NFL a little bit, played for Minnesota, and that was the early 70s. And other than that, you know, nobody, some of these guys play in the Canadian Football League, and that obviously goes on. There's 17 Canadian players for every Canadian Football League team that are actually Canadian, the rest are Americans. And, they named my high school football field after me. You know, football is a funny thing in Canada. I got to say, hockey is still the major sport. And you go to, the games are just not, you know, as publicized or as important, I think, than it was. But, you know, people know in the football world, they know who I am in Canada. They, you know, my names get mentioned up every time around the draft in Canada. And, you know, as if you're a football person, you probably know Mike Chat 30-plus years ago.
Go ahead, Dave.
So tell me about draft day. How was that?
Well, I actually was with my agent in Toronto. This guy's name was Gil Scott. And he was a specialist on bringing guys from the Canadian Football League into the NFL. So he'd find the talent, and he would get them workouts, say, with the Dallas Cowboys, Miami Dolphins, in the offseason to see what they could do. So, you know, he was a good lead for me because here you had a Canadian that really hadn't been done before. And to see if we can get some, you know, publicity in the National Football League. And I think the key thing for me was, you know, he secured a few workouts. They started getting my name in there. I was named the top lineman in Canada my senior year playing. And I got invited to the East-West Shrine Game. And then, you know, it sort of took off once you had American eyes on you. And then getting invited to the Combine and doing well in the Combine. And then I looked at 9 other NFL teams. And then 16 teams literally came to Kingston, Ontario, Canada, to work me out of my college and stuff. And that sort of, you know, took off from there.
Oh, very interesting. And, you know, when you talk about Mike then going life after football, I mean, that transition you talked about, you were offensive line coach for Temple for how many years?
I was there for 5 years at Temple, and it was a good transition because the NFL was fast-paced. You know, you get there at 7, 6:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, you're leaving at 6 o'clock at night. And then you went to the Canadian Football League for a couple of years, and they only let you practice for, you know, what, 5.5 hours. You're only allowed to be at the facility for that long. It's actually orientated towards guys in second careers. And then leaving that and going to coaching was a good way to transition sort of out of playing football. But Temple was, you know, it was a good experience. You know, you learned a lot. It's tough being a coach, man. I mean, I sat there with Bobby Wallace, who was a head coach at the time when I was there. And I go, Bobby, how long have you been coaching? He said, 24 years. How many teams have you been on? He goes, 12. So I go, Bobby, math tells you places where you're living every 2 years. And he goes, yup. Some year times it was longer. And 1 year I coached for 3 teams in 1 year. And I'm going, wow, that's pretty rough. And he goes, yeah, football's not for everybody as a coach. So it sort of was an eye-opening experience that being a college coach isn't easy.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, I wonder if I can get a little personal here for a second.
Sure.
Everyone always wonders, you know, the NFL, they make so much money, and you've had like a 10-year career or so. When you transitioned out of football into, you know, the real world, what were your finances like? And, you know, are you're not one of those guys that that went through a lot of money, or did you save it? Did you invest it? I know you're doing mortgage banking now. Tell us all about that.
Crazy. Here's an interesting statistic. I think I read a study about 77% of NFL players go bankrupt during their career or post-career.
Amazing.
And, you know, I came from an Ivy League school. I was pretty good with money, pretty realistic with money. But once again, 1986.
You're a business major.
Yeah, and a business major. In 1986, I made $500,000 signing bonus. And $125,000 was my first year. $150,000 was my second. My third year with the Rams was $175,000. And, oh, I got traded to the Eagles, and I got a $50,000 bonus, and I was making $350,000. I thought I was rich.
Mm.
Lawrence Taylor was the first player in, I think it was 1991 or 92, to make $2 million. And at the same time, Jim Lachey, left tackle for the Redskins, was the first offensive lineman to make $1 million. So those guys sort of gives you, you know,
things have really changed.
We weren't making that money. I see these guys in the NFL Players Association that I hang out with, and guys my age, a little older and such, they're still working, have other jobs because they didn't make enough money during those years, and they don't have medical insurance. So, you know, a lot of you back in my day, you have to go back to work after you're done playing because you're not, I mean,
good point.
Smart guys. They're making $100 million, $2 million, maybe got $3 million,
right.
$4 million in the bank. You're doing well from 1986. Well, you know what? $3 million in the bank at today's thing with college, 2 kids, those kind of things. You know, disgruntled ex-wife. Hey, you know what?
Hard to feel sorry for him, isn't it?
And Mike's making a great point, Dave, and think about this in so many ways that I ran into Kevin Barlow at this one event about 2 months ago. And I said, so what are you doing? He says, nothing. Because, again, he ended up in a different time. He played a couple years in the NFL, but he was a starter and he made good money. Right, Mike? And if you save the money right and you do certain things, he says, I'm retired enjoying my kids. So it's a different story.
Yeah, like that don't need to work anymore.
Right, exactly. Unless they don't say it. We'll see if they have.
I never made $1 million in a year. Yeah, the highest bonus, I hit like 740 one year, hitting all my bonuses because I was a Sports Illustrated All-Pro at the end of the year. I had a good team, my best season in my career. But then, you know, I went to Cleveland, I took a pay cut. After the next year, I got hurt. He took a pay cut. Boom! I was at the end of my career. I was at the 10th year. You know, so it was over. And
so, Mike, is it worth it? Even today, all that money, is it worth it with the traumatic brain injury that they have and lifelong things that they have to deal with forever? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I'm a lucky guy. First of all, you guys are in Delaware. My girlfriend is a surgeon in Delaware. So I got good medical care. Christiana Hospital, I'm pretty good. So I got good medical care. But, you know, with it, you
know, TMI.
I wouldn't have done it any other way. Yeah.
Oh,
I wouldn't
have done it TBI, anywhere else. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have done it anywhere else. I mean, it's great. Hey, I'm actually, my son's 10 years old. My daughter's 13 years old. My son and I are testing for our black belt in Taekwondo this weekend. So, you know, I'm still keeping it together, still staying active, you know, trying not
great.
To get hurt.
Yeah.
But, it's we're still after it. You know, I coach the flag team. I coach basketball, too. And, you know, we have a lot of fun. And, you know, it's just enjoying life here at 55.
Now, here's a question, Mike. When you talk about business now, so you said, is this your own business you have, Mike, or you work for a company to promote what you're doing?
No, I've been in banking ever since I left Temple. It's now about 17 years, and I'm in a mortgage banker. And what that means is we'll lend residential with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA-type loans. We also do Alt-A loans that are a little off the mainstream of persons, you know, one day at a bankruptcy, one day at a foreclosure, those kind of things. We'll do that kind of paper, too. And so I work with a lot of realtors, you know, builders, attorneys, and, you know, try to help CPAs and work with their clients and, you know, get them loans. So it's, you know, I've been doing this quite a while now. I've been everything from a broker, having my own business, having my own building, to now, you know, the business model sort of changed a little bit. Now I work for a federal mortgage banker. That means we have offices and we can do loans in all 50 states in the United States, the company. And I focus on the tri-state area, Jersey, you know, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware.
Awesome. Well, that's great. And glad you're enjoying life. You're glad you have the activities. You're staying active and doing all those things. And that's the difference is Mike, Dave, in a lot of ways had to go back to work. And sometimes when he's working in a field that keeps the brain moving, you're not going to have as many traumatic injuries and you can repair the brain in certain ways. But Dave, go ahead. Last question. The reason Dave's on the show is he went through some hard times as well, Mike, in life. And Dave, tell us about the story if Mike missed it when I was interviewing you. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mike, you know, my wife had a stroke 22 years ago, and she lost her speech, became paralyzed on the right side, but she came through it, you know, after a couple of year grieving period of hell on earth, so to speak. She reinvented herself, realized that she's still alive. God must not be done with her yet. So she just decided to attempt to do everything she did before, and she still can't talk, but she can communicate through Pictionary charades, two games I hate, by the way, but I'm trying to learn to love. And she's in a wheelchair, but we travel all around the world, and we're helping other caregivers stay alive, stay out of the hospital. And, you know, I'm speaking on TV and Harvard and just all over the place. And so my question to you is, you know, do you give much awareness to your parents who are probably baby boomers and getting in their 80s and 90s, I would assume, and the care that they're going to need? Do you worry about that?
Yeah. My dad's 83 and my mom's 80. They're both retired in Canada. For a while there, I owned the house and they lived in a house that I had on the lake for quite some time. And, they got a little older, didn't want to push snow anymore, cut grass, so we moved them into our hometown, into single level. My sister is semi-retired now and moved very close to them now, so they're
that's
there,
good.
You know, taking care of them. So that's, you know, yeah, we're that's yeah. definitely on the radar.
Yeah, I'm all about, you know, giving the caregivers support, so, you know, help her out, because it's easy to burn out. 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do, and the rest of them get sicker, needing a caregiver themselves. Tough,
right?
It's a tough gig, even tougher than football.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I got a funny story. I had a teacher on, so he talks about, now Dave says caregiving's tougher than football. Well, I had a guest on, and I'm not going to say his name because we don't want to get in a politics conversation, but he was a teacher at one point in time, and he would meet all these very wealthy people, and he'd tell them, hey, I'm a kindergarten teacher, and I have the hardest job in the world. And I would say that is probably one of the most exhausting jobs in the world. He talks to all these intellectuals, and then he would get all upset at them when they say that. And if I told you who the person was, just Google who I interviewed last night, Mike, and you would understand why that guy would say what he says. But when you talk about caregiving to football to kindergarten teaching, I'm going to go with kindergarten teaching. I'm a former teacher. I never taught kindergarten, subbed in kindergarten.
I did my B.Ed. in health and percent social studies. So you know what? I went out there after I was done playing. I got my bachelor's in education from Queen's University of Canada. I did my crack, and I go, you know what? I'm going back to school. I'm going to get my MBA. I can't I get my bachelor's in sports business. I can't.
You're a smart guy. Up,
man. I thought it was tough in the NFL. I went to business school.
The teachers are the...
But, you know, it's funny. I got my buddies who are teachers now, and they're retired. So.
Hey, you know, you never know. But
last question, Mike. What's interest rates going to do, and what's the real estate market going to do? Are we looking for a crash here?
Well, I think it's still on the rise. I think the current administration is putting pressure on the Fed not to raise it. I think he's already positively influenced the Fed from raising the rates this year, and he's going to try and curtail. You look at economic history. Every time the Fed gets involved and starts pumping up the rates, creates a market change. So if you control the Fed a little bit right now, you get the position where I think, you know, we can, you know, prevent or maybe slow down the impact of a market. Who knows? And not to be political or anything like that. I'm an economist. If he loses the election in 2020 and a Democrat gets in there, the market may change again to change tax laws. It's one thing I've noticed having a Canadian perspective becoming an American perspective. It's like that Toby Keith song, you got to love the American ride. Because one day it's the next day policy is this, and it changes, and the whole market changes. So you can see how volatile the Dow's been just in the last few, you know, weeks. You know, just with
so the Fed is not really independent. They can be pressured, is what you're saying, huh?
Well, it looks like that's happening.
Human nature.
Donald Trump likes to put a little bit of pressure on everybody from the state supreme, from the federal Supreme Court down to the Fed. He likes to, if he's got any influence, he'll use it.
Now, last thing, Mike, and this is it.
Financially correct.
You know why, Mike, I brought you on? Sorry. It's kind of funny. I mean, I knew I was friends with you on Facebook, but when you went ahead and asked me to like your mortgage banker. So is this your business, Mike? Because you went ahead and you asked me to like it.
I work for the bank. I have a nationally registered and NMLS number. I'm a licensed, like a CPA now has to get licensed. We have to get licensed. And we have to do continuing education. It's pretty formalized, man. I mean, that exam was a 3-hour exam to become a mortgage banker, a loan officer, and it's not a joke. You've got to study for it. I know guys that have taken it 3 times, 4 times. So it's a tough business. It was actually really profitable before 2008 and 2009, but we all know what happened then.
Yep.
It's changing. It's getting better. I don't think you'll ever see a collapse like you did in 2009. Yeah. I mean, that's comparable in U.S. history to the Great Depression. So, you know,
my brother was doing that. Same boat.
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of people back then doing it. That now it's changed, and it's really
now he's selling medical insurance.
So Mike, do you want to get people to like it? Do you have I know you don't have a website. Do you want people to like your mortgage page? I'm just trying to give you some promotion, if anything.
Yeah, sure. I'm actually Mike the Mortgage Man. If you get out there, Mike the Mortgage Man, anybody in like the tri-state area here needs a loan, love to help them out. This is my cell phone here. I post my cell phone. Let's talk to a lot of people. My motto is there's no such thing as a bad question, and all questions are free.
All right.
You'll help them out with the mortgage information, and you'll talk football too. You get a twofer.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
You get a twofer.
You got an edge over the competition.
That's what the Cowboy fans call, though. The Cowboy fans call.
You're in trouble then, Mike. All right. Well, thanks for calling, Mike. Thanks, Dave. Guys, take care. All right.
Thank you. Great interview.
All right. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Bye. You're listening to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment.